My name is Brad Price. I want to welcome you to this Bible study in Revelation chapter 6. In our last study, we talked about the first three seals in Revelation chapter 6. In this study, we want to talk about the next three seals. I'm going to be reading the text here in just a moment. And then as we've done before, we have two other teachers with us tonight, Ivy Connor, Lonnie Woodruff. Lonnie will be following Ivy. Ivy will put kind of a spine on our study. And then Ivy and I will, with Lonnie, sort through the text little by little and pick up some information as far as making some additional points. So let's go ahead and have our Bible text. I'll be reading from the ASV, starting with Revelation chapter 6 and verse 7. John said, "And when he opened the fourth seal, I heard the voice of the fourth living creature saying, 'Come.' And I saw and behold a pale horse, and he that sat upon him, his name was Death. And Hades followed with him. And there was given unto them authority over the fourth part of the earth to kill with the sword and with famine and with death." Moving down a little bit more, we find that John said, moving down now to what we have here in, lost my place there for just a little bit. As far as the death, we also have it with the wild beasts of the earth. Moving down to verse 9, "And when he opened the fifth seal, I saw underneath the altar the souls of them that had been slain for the word of God and for the testimony which they held. And they cried with a great voice, saying, 'How long, O Master, the holy and true, dost thou not judge and avenge our blood on them that dwell on the earth?'" And then coming down to verse 11, "And it was given to them," or given them to each one, "a white robe. And it was said unto them that they should rest yet for a little time, until their fellow servants also and their brethren, who should be killed, even as they were, should have fulfilled their course." And then finally, as we come down to verse 12, he talks about the sixth seal. "And I saw when he opened the sixth seal, and there was a great earthquake, and the sun became black as sackcloth of hair, and the whole moon became as blood, and the stars of the heaven fell upon the earth, as a fig tree casts her unripe figs when she is shaken of a great wind." And then finally, 14 through 17, "And the heaven was removed as a scroll when it is rolled up, and every mountain and island were moved out of their places. And the kings of the earth and the princes and the chief captains and the rich and the strong and every bondman and freeman hid themselves in the caves and in the rocks of the mountains." And then finally, 16 and 17, "And they say to the mountains and the rocks, 'Fall on us and hide us from the face of him that sitteth on the throne and from the wrath of the Lamb. For the great day of their wrath is come, and who is able to stand?'" What a picture. And we're going to turn things now over to Ivy.
Okay, folks, we've been talking among ourselves in our prep before the program started, how important it is for us to kind of get an overview, and it's hard to teach this in segments, it really is, and sometimes hard to study segments. That's why I like to do one all-day study, and that's exhausting, but it's also enlightening. But what I want to do is just very quickly tie these together again, showing you this is a unit. It's not something out there that's just unwieldy, but first of all, you become a Christian. That's the first rider on the white horse, and it's Jesus on the white horse, because he's the only one there in chapter 19. He brought up again, he's riding that white horse. He's going forth to war with an army of white horses following him to judge. They're going forth conquering and to conquer. Jesus is the conqueror, and the word is Nike, and it's used many times, or several times throughout the book of Revelation. You go to a Greek text, you can find that Nike. It's translated conquer, victory, overcome. To triumph, we win. The Nike shoe is, we're the winners, and God is telling us we're the winners through him. In fact, Paul said that in the book of Romans, in all these things, we're more than conquerors. We're more than Nike to him that loved us. So the first seal is Jesus riding the white horse. He conquers us. We become Christians, and then we go forth conquering and to conquer. Brad made a great point in the last series, the last lesson that we did, in talking about that's involved as evangelism. And that is the key to all of this. Without evangelism, there would be no book of Revelation. That's the whole point of what we do. We want to evangelize with the good news, bring people to Christ. Once we have them there, we want to be able to keep them there in the love of God, the grace of God, and we want to see eternity with that. And Revelation will carry that theme also. So the first seal is right on the white horse, that Jesus coming forth. He conquers us, and then we go forth on as we live our life. We're persecuted. That's the second seal. The rider on the red horse, it's a war, some, and persecution. Some die, not all die, but these people that were conquered by the gospel are now persecuted. And once we become a Christian, Paul said Paul said that all that live godly in Christ Jesus will suffer persecution. I believe that's 2 Timothy chapter 3 and verse 12. So first seal, we become a Christian. Second seal, we're persecuted. That's what they did. The Romans did that to the Christians in that day, no doubt about that. Third seal, the black horse and the rider on the black horse. There was plenty of oil and wine and plenty of food. The Christians just could not afford it because they had to take a job, a lesser job. They could not get the trade guild where the big money was because of the perverseness, the immorality that associated the trade guilds. And so the Christians had to get a job, maybe at less income. And then they had another problem when they went to the store. They didn't have the same pay scale. And what they bought, a loaf of bread may cost somebody a dollar, cost $5 maybe for a Christian. It's just strange in how this works, but that's what's happening here in the book of Revelation. You become a Christian, you're persecuted. Third seal, black horse and rider. He has a balance seal in his hand. He measures out the money that he has and how much that will buy. And one day's wage would buy a quart of food, which would feed one man for one day. So you work all day, you can't feed all your family. You can just one person, you can divide it up maybe and you get skinnier. Or you can buy three measures of barley for a penny and you could separate that. But what are you going to do for the rest of the food? What are you going to do for a living and rent and clothing and sickness and transportation? You know, you got to get somewhere. You got an animal, you got to feed it too. And how are you going to do all these things? And so what happens is the black horse, the rider there is economic discrimination. You guys can't live like us Romans do because we say Caesar's Lord. We worship Caesar. And because of that, we're able to get the big bucks and you can't. And so, you know, that was their appeal. Why don't you leave Jesus and come join us? And Revelation 2:10 says, no, you be faithful to God and to death. And don't you follow the wrong way. And so that's the third seal. We come to the fourth seal. The fourth seal is the pale horse. He's called other names in other translations, but it says that you have the rider on the pale horse and rider. Well, if you can't, number one, if you become a Christian, you're persecuted, and then you can't afford to buy a meal, you can't eat, you're starving to death. What's going to happen? Well, the fourth seal is death, and Hades follows. That's very simple. You become a Christian, you're persecuted. You can't afford to live because of the economics of the thing and you're prejudiced against you. And then finally, because of that, well, sir, you're going to die. And death in Hades comes along, scoops them up, and you go on, whether that be the grave or the souls of the dead. We've discussed that. And that's in our time. We may discuss within the framework of this study. The fifth seal, souls are alive under the altar. Chapter 6, verses 9 through 11, these people that died, they're not dead. We look before the altar, and there they are before the throne of God. The throne of God, Revelation 4, 2, is in heaven. And they're under the altar of God, which is before the throne. So these people, though they die, the bodies are in the grave, they're living. They're living, and they're with Christ at the throne of God. And that's the fifth seal. The souls are alive. And they're crying out to God, how long is it going to be, Lord, before you take care of this problem? And he gives them a white robe. That's the victory robe, the graduation garment. You're saved. You've conquered. You've overcome. Take this white robe. And he says, rest a while. I'll take care of it. That brings us to the sixth seal, sixth seal, which he, in essence, says, here's the judgment going to fall. Here comes the judge. Didn't fall yet. It's predicted. And he shows pictures of this. And then the seventh seal is the judgment that does fall. And that that doesn't play out until chapter 8, 9, 10, 11, because the seventh seal involves seven trumpets. And we don't even want to get into that tonight. We just want to get through the first six and get through these the last three seals, the fourth seal, the fifth seal, and the sixth seal. So that's a little summary there. And I'll throw it back to Brad or Delaney.
All right. Thank you very much, Ivy. Always good to have you kind of take the lead here and give us a framework to work within. Ivy, let's set aside Ivy for just a second. You can jump back in here, Ivy, in a little bit if you like, but let's go back to verses 7 and 8. And Lonnie, some things there that maybe you want to discuss.
Thank you, Brad. Mm-hmm. Yes, I would just like to point out that I think Ivy did an excellent job in the first three seals. these are things. Now, maybe the one difference that I would say is I think this is an interpretation, or this is a prophecy that will be fulfilled throughout the Christian dispensation. I think the white horse will ride throughout the Christian dispensation. I think the gospel will be preached according to verse 2, the white horse, and then the fiery red horse. I think there will be peace taken from this earth until Jesus comes again. I think it's a prophecy of the entire Christian dispensation. And then in verse 5, the third seal is the black horse. And I think again, that is a picture of what this Christian dispensation will be like. There will be times of poverty. There will be people who are rich. There will be people who are poor. And a lot of times the Christians certainly are persecuted and certainly fall into this category of being poor and destitute in many cases, but not necessarily always, because these are things that will take place all during the Christian dispensation. And then we come to the fourth seal. Let me do this one first, and then I would like to look at that graphic, Brad.
Okay.
The fourth seal, the first verse, chapter or verse 7, is simply an introduction to it. When he opened the fourth seal, I heard the voice of the fourth living creature saying, "Come and see." And he said, "And so I looked, and behold, a pale horse. And the name of him who sat on it was Death and Hades." Well, again, this is a picture of what's going to take place all during the Christian dispensation. There are going to be Christians who are persecuted, and there are going to be Christians who are killed, and people will suffer mightily, even to the point of death, until Jesus comes again. And he says, "Death and Hades followed him." So there's the death and the grave. And then, "And power was given to him over the fourth of the earth to kill with the sword and with hunger and with death and with the beast of the earth." So all these many different ways Christians will suffer. And I don't want to leave the impression that Christians are going to suffer totally. That's not the case. I think what we have here is a picture of what the Christian dispensation will be like. And there'll be lots of people out there suffering, whether they're Christians or not. And we're warned about these things. These seals are telling us that these things are going to happen. And so when we see them happen, to be prepared for them. They would be killed with hunger, with death, and by the beast of the earth. I hesitated to do this, but I think I'm going to go ahead and do it. The beast of the earth, we're dealing in Revelation with symbolism. And so we have to watch carefully. I know that Daniel was put in a lion's den. He was killed, or he would have been killed by a beast had he not been faithful to God, and God delivered him. But in the book of Daniel, the beast is symbolic of different governments. There were Daniel was living in the time, at the beginning of the book, living in the time of Babylon. And then after Babylon came Medo-Persia, and then the Persian part of that government arose and became much more powerful, and it was called a beast. And then after that, the Greek kingdom, under the leadership of Alexander the Great, they ruled the world, and they were the third beast that would be that would arise from the time of Daniel. And then we're told that there would be a fourth beast, very severe. And without a lot of interpretation, we understand that the beast that followed Greece, the Grecian Empire, was Rome. And so we have four examples in Daniel that talk about beasts. So it's, I did that just to show you that it's very, very possible here that those who were killed by the beasts of the earth may have been those who were suppressed, killed, tortured, treated in many different ways by governments of this world. Governments of this world want to rule the people, and they will go to any lengths to rule the people. And so in Daniel, they were called beasts. So it's very possible that a lot of these persecutions and things that Christians undergo throughout the Christian dispensation will be brought on by the symbolic beast, which would be the governments of this world. That's just something for your thinking. Now, I would like to say one more thing before we get into the fifth seal. The seals, the trumpets, and the plagues, and this, I'll leave this kind of for you to study and you to just watch carefully as you go through and see how this works. But the first four in each of these series, the seals, the trumpets, and the plagues, the first four seem to deal with events and things that will take place that will happen on this earth. And then the last three tend to tell us a little bit about how God is going to deal with a situation. So what we have in the first four here are things that are going to take place during this Christian dispensation. Now, also another symbol in this 6-8 that I would like to deal with just a little bit. I hesitate to do it here. I'd rather do it in chapter 8, but I'm going to do it here just to get you started on it. The fourth, over a fourth of the earth. Well, that's interesting that a fourth of the earth, what in the world has a fourth of the earth ever been destroyed, a fourth of the people of the earth or anything? I think what we're dealing with here again is a number that is symbolic. And what we do is once we understand the symbolism of this number, it tells us exactly what those first four seals are talking about. We understand that man is divided or has two parts to his total being. Matthew 10:28 says, "And do not fear those who kill the body, but cannot kill the soul, but rather fear him who is able to destroy both soul and body in hell." Well, this may not be, that particular verse may not point to exactly what this verse is saying, but it explains to us the total being of man. We have a physical being and we have a spiritual being or a soul. We have a body and a soul, and we believe that. We know that. Now, if you were going to designate a part of the body or part of man that is going to be symbolized, and we can use a number to symbolize the physical part of man, what number would that be? Well, the number four is the physical number. We talked about that early on. We talked about the number four being the four winds of the earth, the four directions, the physical things of this earth. Now, if we were going to designate or talk about a certain part of man, either body or soul, how would we designate that? Well, a part of something is expressed in a fraction. So if we have the 1/4 or the fourth part of man, then we're talking about the physical body of man. The other side, the other number that would be used, or fraction that would be used, and we will deal with it in chapter 8, is 1/3. Now, the number 3 deals with the spiritual things. Christ was on the cross. He was buried and died in the grave 3 days. There were 3 crucified. He was crucified in the 3rd hour. Many of the things that took place in the life of Christ took place in 3s. So 3 is the spiritual number. So if we were going to designate the part of man that was spiritual, the fraction, a part, the fraction, 1/3, would be the number we would use to designate. So the 1/4 part of man is the physical part of man, and the 1/3 part of man would be the spiritual part of man. So the point being here in 6:8 is that these people riding this pale horse, power was given to them over the 4th part of the earth. Only the physical part of the earth, not the spiritual part of the earth. They could kill man's body, but they cannot kill his soul. God is in charge of that. As long as we are faithful, God will protect our souls. So the first 4 seals are explaining to us things that will happen during this Christian dispensation that will affect our physical bodies. And then we are killed with a sword and hunger and death and beast of the earth. So that's the possibility that the governments are meant by the beast of the earth. And then I'll go on and quickly, the 6th seal, I'll just run through this and let Ivy have another shot at this. He opened the 5th seal. I saw under the old altar the souls of those who had been slain for the word of God. Well, those are martyrs, Christian martyrs. They cried with a loud voice, "How long, O Lord, holy and true, until you judge and avenge our blood on those who dwell on the earth?" So they're asking, when are you going to avenge our blood? When are you going to bring this to an end? White, in verse 11, white robes were given to them. That just indicated they're Christians. It says that to them, they should rest a little while longer until both the number of their fellow servants and their brethren who should be killed as they were was completed. So he's telling them that I understand that you have been killed, that you have been persecuted, but it's not time. It's not time for me to avenge your blood. That will be done when Christ comes again. So he says, rest a little while longer until the brethren who would be killed as they were completed. Well, that may not be completed until the day Jesus comes again. And then he says, and I looked, and when he opened the 6th seal, behold, there was a great earthquake, and the sun became as sackcloth of hair, and the moon became as blood. Now, this 6th seal, before I tell you what I'm going to do, I'm going to stop here, and I'm going to let Ivy go back and say the things he would like to, or Brad, in verse 6, 8 through 10, and then I'd like to have my graphic before I go into 12, okay? Brad, that be all right with you?
Sure. Let me go ahead and jump back to seal number 4 here for just a second in verses 7 and 8. A couple things that strike me as I look at this. When you think about the color pale, what comes to mind? Maybe you've had, you're not a person who has a green thumb, and maybe you've had a sickly plant, or maybe you've planted something in the yard, some flowers, and the water hasn't been quite as great as what you'd hoped. And it has that sickly, it has that blighted color. And you're thinking, I think that's going to die. Two, another thing, when you look at what John talks about here as far as this horse, and he says that the rider on the horse, it had a name, and that, of course, was death, and then Hades follows death. There is that connection. It's like they're almost like Pac-Man. One's going right after the other. There have been some people, and I think Ivy has mentioned this at times, or maybe it was in some of our private conversations, but there's some people who have the idea that there is a grim reaper. You don't read about a grim reaper in the Bible. That makes for good movie fodder, but you don't find that in scripture. Yet you see sometimes people, they have this idea that there is this skeletal figure and he's on a horse and he's going out and collecting the spirits of mankind. Well, again, good science fiction perhaps, but that's not what you find in scripture. But you do find that there is a connection between death and Hades. Ivy touched on this a little bit. There are people who have multiple ideas about Hades. Some people define Hades as the grave. Some people understand Hades as a place where all the deceased people went before Jesus went to heaven. And some people now think that Hades still holds all the dead and will continue to house the dead. Well, it really doesn't matter. But Hades is a place that was created by God. And at least in the past, we can say for sure it has held people. When you look at the latter part of verse 8, you find Lonnie gave an explanation as far as one approach to understanding the fourth part and the third part of the earth, that it is obviously information about a fraction. And it would seem that John did describe something, and other people have come up with different things, but you're going to see this again in places like Revelation chapter 8. So it is important. We talked earlier in the studies as far as taking a notebook. And if you get a different explanation from one of the three teachers, or you have a different explanation, you might write down that symbol and write down the explanation that's given, write down perhaps some cross references or some additional information. And that way you can study that out. And you can conclude that, yes, that does appear to be exactly right, or I'm not quite so sure that that is right, or I think I have a different idea. But John certainly does talk about, as you look at the seals here, the fact that there are physical things that do affect us in life. Rome, the Christians, and Ivy has done a really good job as far as emphasizing the word shortly. There were some things that God's people faced. They faced all the hardships that he talked about. There was the persecution, and they were involved with evangelism, and they faced economic discrimination, all those issues. Some people have looked at the second seal where John talked about the red horse, and they say, and again, Ivy, if you listen carefully to what he said, he quickly dealt with this, but he made an excellent point. He talked about how the fact that persecution does not always end in death. And that is right. Sometimes people feel like they wish they were dead, but their physical life is not preserved, even though they're absolutely miserable. So it made sense for John to talk about the persecution that God's people were experiencing in the first century. If you look at this from the perspective that Lonnie is emphasizing, persecution has certainly continued. And then death is also a problem. But that's not a problem, because Jesus has the keys to death and Hades. And we read about that back in Revelation chapter 1 and verse 18. I will go back and trying to tie this into what I said just a little bit before as far as trying to understand these seals. Sometimes that's complicated a little bit, because you can look at some passages in the Old Testament and say, well, the seal that John uses was used in this way, and that's true. And you find sometimes that a seal was used in a different way. And that's not necessarily contradictory, but in trying to figure out whether it's here or here, that does make the study a little more complicated. It makes it a little more challenging. And as we've said several times, you will see some differences between the three teachers as we go through this. And yet, even though you will see some of those differences, you can still study this book effectively. You can still study this book in a group setting. And we do encourage you to do that. Get some friends together and say, there are some videos. We'd like to have a Revelation watch party. Who wants to bring the popcorn? Who wants to bring the cookies? And who wants to provide the drinks? And where will the house be that we watch the videos? We encourage you to do that, because God did intend for this book to be studied. And he says it's a blessing to study it. As you go back and you look at what John talks about as far as the threats to mankind, the sword, the famine, the death, and the wild beast. If you go back in the Old Testament, you'll find, for example, in Ezekiel chapter 14 and verse 21, God had these four sore judgments that he's used to punish nations throughout time. And you find, I think Lonnie did a good job as far as mentioning some of the nations that injured God's people. The Assyrians were certainly brutal. And for example, the Assyrians, you have some of the prophets asking God, you're not going to use those people, surely. They're terrible people. And God says, yes, I am. But don't expect that they're going to get off scot-free. And certainly in John's days, you think about Rome, you think about the arenas, you think about the wild beasts. Rome was absolutely brutal. People were sometimes covered with pitch or soaked in oil. People were used as human torches to light up evening chariot races. There were people who were starved to death, and things were really, really horrible. And yet you get to this picture in Revelation chapter 6 of souls being underneath the altar. Now, one of the things that I've wondered about over the years, and maybe Ivy or Lonnie will want to jump back in here on this or something else. Some people have tried to look at that or focus on that from the standpoint of location. And maybe that's John's emphasis. He didn't say. But it's also possible, I think, or maybe in an additional point is he's stressing why they died. And like you can go back, maybe you've heard some people at funerals, preachers talk about Psalm 116, verse 15, precious is in the sight of the Lord, the death of his saints. And maybe that's also part of the picture that John is trying to give here, that he uses this image to say that these people are certainly precious. Yes, they suffered horribly as far as life on earth. They were treated wrongly and they could not have been treated more poorly, but God was concerned about them. And now, as they have left life on earth, here is how he's describing their status. Ivy, you want to jump back in there on some things before we end up with probably seal number six?
Yeah, the fourth seal we've discussed, come and see. It's like, we're not bringing the battle to you. You come and look and see this vision. It's a vision, and therefore it is symbolic in many ways. That's been discussed. The power was given to them over the fourth part of the earth to kill with the sword, hunger. I think those are literal, the sword, the hunger, the death, and the beast of the earth. Now, if we bring this into our generation, we don't die all of that way. We don't have swords. We got bombs and bullets and the viruses and all kinds of things we can kill with. So to clarify, my position on this is, and Brian keeps saying, we kind of come together, is I don't believe you can go outside the book of Revelation with the fulfillment of Rome beyond that. I believe it's fulfilled in that. I believe it says it is. And I think when we get into that, we'll see that. But so why study the book of Revelation? Because he says, if you have an ear to hear, let you hear. The concepts in this are still true.
Yes.
The persecution is still true. We all agree on that. The enemy is still going to be defeated, whoever the enemy is. And so it's important that we appreciate the fact that the book of Revelation is an eternal truth.
Yeah.
Whether it was happened to them, those seven churches are gone. Nothing can happen to those churches. The candlesticks have been removed. They're gone from the face of history, gone with the wind. So that part is fulfilled. And in chapter 22, he works laboriously to say, it's shortly come to pass. Now, either that means something or it doesn't. And I cannot see any verse taking us beyond that. We'll talk about that later. But to clarify, my position is, yes, I think it's fulfilled, complete within the 325, 350, AD with Constantine basically freeing the Christians and bringing the kingdom back together, and then the kingdom just went downhill. The Roman Empire just essentially disintegrated as the judgment of God fell upon it. So that's just a little aside to that, since there's been so much given to that tonight. But the fifth seal is, when he opened the fifth seal, saw under the altar the souls of them. Well, you know what? If you become a Christian, you're persecuted. Second seal. Third seal, you can't find enough to eat. You can't make a living, feed your family on what you make. Then you're going to die. That's the fourth. Well, let's just close the book then. Somebody said, well, it was death. That's it. No, it's not it. Mm-hmm. Praise God for the fifth seal. There's still three more seals. Well, that's just the third and fourth seal. Death and Hades comes along, but there is a hereafter. And here is what is hereafter. When he says in fifth seal, I opened the fifth seal, I saw under the altar the souls of them that were slain. Well, where's the altar? Revelation 4:2. The altar is in before the throne of God, and it's in heaven. Chapter 8, verse 3. The altar before the throne of God there. And the souls are under that altar. These people that were slain, that lost their lives, that died, however they died, with starvation or torn by animals or however they died, they're alive now. The bodies are in the grave, or in the sea, or where they might be, but they're still alive and they're living with God. Paul said, I desire to depart and be with Christ, for it's far better there. And if we're absent from the body, we're present with the Lord. All of these passages that you know, sometimes we set those aside, but no, when we die, we go to be with the Lord now. And I think that's a certainty there in that regard, if you're a faithful Christian. He says they got white robes. That's a victory garment. You've got your white robe. It represents purity. It represents victory. And you're there with God before the throne of God. And that's great. And then I'm going to stop there and we'll come back and touch sixth seal. I'm trying to make this as concise as I can, guys. Y'all go ahead.
All right. A couple things that I want to toss out here. Again, there are practical things in this book. And one of the practical things is the book of Revelation denies soul sleeping. These people died. Now, whether they're death by, you think that it was death by a bullet or death by a sword, they have died. They were faithful. And what do? They cry out to God. They are not asleep. Now, regardless of how you get there, that is a really important point for us in today's world because of what some religious people teach. And that is obviously not the truth. Second point, and this is something I had assumed for a long time, but I had assumed that the crying in Revelation chapter 6 and verse 10 is expressed with the present or the imperfect tense. Stated another way, that this was ongoing action. When we think about people today, if they're treated unjustly, unfairly, if they're looking for vengeance, and God says that belongs to him. But if people are seeking help from God, you think about how they are going perhaps and praying several times or asking again and again and again. That is not the tense of the verb that John used. It is the aorist tense. Now, I find that to be really important because it was as if these people cried out one time. They asked, how long? Well, the implication is that God answered the question and they were satisfied with the answer. There again is, in my mind, a very practical point. There are people who think about eternity and they think, oh, how is God going to deal with this? How is God going to deal with that? Well, God was given a chance to answer this question. He did answer it, and it was, shall we say, more than sufficient. All right, Lonnie, we'll turn things over to you for a little bit if you want to say some additional things about seal number six.
Okay, let me, I want to go back to the fifth one just for a second, okay. And then we'll let you bring up my graphic and I'll go into the sixth seal just a little bit.
Okay.
Well, let me go through a little of it first. Okay, the fifth seal I saw under the altar, I think, you know, I can't tell you exactly what that means and exactly who that's talking about. When we know it's Christians because they're dressed in white robes. But there's a little technique that you can use that must be used in Revelation in order to understand the book. And that is to go back to the Old Testament and look for the physical things that took place in the Old Testament that pointed to the spiritual things that's taking place today in the Christian dispensation. Now, we see here taking place in the Christian dispensation is the way I look at it, is that these souls are being slain. There are people being slain until Jesus comes again. And they're under the altar. Well, that correlates exactly with what took place in the Old Testament in as they offered the sacrifices as they went into the tabernacle. There are three or four verses. I'll just read one, but Leviticus 4:25 says, "The priest shall take of me the blood of the sin offering with his finger." Now, this was a sin offering, okay? And we know that Christians have sacrificed themselves and made basically the sin offering. "It is put on the horns of the altar of the burnt offering and pour its blood at the base of the altar of burnt offering." Now, the blood of the bulls that were sacrificed in the Old Testament under the law of Moses, the blood of the bulls were, at least part of it, was poured out under the altar of burnt offerings. Now, Christians make sacrifices today. We're told that we will have to sacrifice, that we'll make in this life in order to follow God. So as we sacrifice, as we come into the church, as we have our sins forgiven, and we make sacrifices, then the souls of those people who die are under the altar, just like the blood of the bulls were under the altar in the Old Testament.
Where's that passage, Lonnie? Give us that passage one more time.
Well, there's three of them. I'll give them. I've got Leviticus 4:7, Leviticus 4:25, and Leviticus 4:30. All talking about the same.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. Thank you. Uh-huh.
Okay. Now then, let me talk just a little bit about the sixth seal. I guess we better go ahead and bring that up, and I'll explain why I'm doing it this way. If you'll look at the graphic, First of all, you see in the on the top line, you see all mankind was in the bondage of sin. When Jesus came to this earth, everyone was in the bondage of sin. And he gave his blood in order that we might be freed from sin. We come into the church, and all those who come into the church, and they will dwell in the wilderness of sin, so to speak, just like the Israelites dwelt in the physical wilderness for 40 years. We will dwell in the wilderness of this world until Jesus comes again. And then at that point, he will take us to our promised land, which is heaven. Now, I hope you'll spend a little time with that graphic because it has tremendous meaning and tremendous application in the book of Revelation. Now, if you'll look down under it, then the seven seals, seven trumpets, and seven last plagues, and I want you to notice how they correlate, or how I believe they correlate with the graphic that is given above. When Christ came the first time, there was this was prior to the writing of the book of Revelation. Christ came, he gave his blood. The book of Revelation was written, and the prophecy was of the Christian dispensation from the blood of Christ until he comes again to take us home to heaven. Now, if you look at that, then the first six seals take us to the time of his second coming. The first six trumpets take us to the time of his second coming, and the first six plagues take us to the time of his second coming. Now, those are three different looks, three different applications, and three different things that we need to understand about the Christian dispensation from the time Jesus died on the cross till he comes again. And notice that the blood and how the second coming correlates. And then the seventh in each of these takes us to the time of eternity or into our promised land. Now, very little is given about that in the book of Revelation, but there are some things that we're told and some things that we can learn. So what we're looking at, as you look at that graphic, we're looking at the sixth seal. Okay, so the first six seals take us to the second coming. The sixth seal takes us to the second coming. Now, Brad, if you'll take that away, I'll go through the sixth seal with that in mind. When he opened the sixth seal, there was a great earthquake. The sun became black as sackcloth of hair and moon like blood. That's quite a catastrophe. The stars of heaven fell to the earth. Its fig tree drops its late figs and is shaken with a mighty wind. The earth is being shaken. The sky receded as a scroll when it is rolled up, and every mountain and island moved out of its place. There was nothing strong enough to stand at this time at the ending of the sixth seal. And the kings of the earth, the great men, the rich men, the commanders, the mighty men, every slave and every free man, that's everybody, hid themselves in caves and in the rocks of mountains and said to the mountains, fall on us and hide us from the face of him who sits on the throne. Now that's who was coming at this time at the end of at the sixth seal. That's when Jesus, that pictures the second coming of Christ. When Jesus came to this earth will be destroyed. This earth will be dissolved and people will be frightened beyond compare. And they said they hid in the mountains, the caves, and everywhere they could go to get away from the one who sits on the throne and from the wrath of the Lamb. Now, we know that at judgment, that's what's going to happen. There's going to be the wrath of Christ for those who refuse to follow him, and there will be a glorious waiting for those who are Christians, that we will live with him forever. And then verse 17 just emphasizes that and repeats. It says, for the great day of his wrath has come.
All right.
The great day of his wrath. Let me finish one more sentence, Brad.
Sure.
And who is able to stand? Now that question is answered in the next chapter. So that's where we need to go and what we need to understand, that we're at the end of this, we're at the time of the sixth seal, and those who are able to stand, not hide in the rocks and or in the caves and the mountains fall on us and all that, who is able to stand will be answered in the next chapter. Okay, Brad, thank you.
Thank you very much, Lonnie. Lonnie did a good job as far as laying out his understanding of how the six seals and the six trumpets and the six bowls of wrath to go together. And then when you deal with the seventh of those three items, as he understands the book, you're dealing with eternity. Ivy has done a good job as far as emphasizing the word shortly in Revelation chapter one. So we're going to let him balance things out as far as giving some additional information with seal number six, and then we'll be done for tonight. Ivy, back to you.
Okay. Again, he beheld when he had opened the sixth seal, and there was a great earthquake. This is continuation. This book is cumulative, and it builds upon itself into a package of evidence on the victory that we have in Jesus. And that's what this is all about, whatever time you place it at. But because it says shortly come to pass, obviously this isn't fulfilled yet in that final coming yet. And so a book is not fulfilled, so then shortly come to pass, that kind of goes out the window. So that's the rub I have with that. I see it all fulfilled. It's cumulative, and it is repetitive. And he's saying basically the same thing. We win, we get, then win. And it's going to be highlighted by repetition, and by, instead of a third being killed, all is killed. Is touched in chapter 16. So we'll go through this and see, as we go. I think I believe in letting the book of Revelation interpret itself. That's what I want to do, tell us what it means, and without us going too far with that. So there's a little bit of a situation there. But anyway, I do want to point out that this kind of language heavens being moved away with the scroll and the mountains shaken and all of this is certainly symbolic. And you could go to, and I was going to read from Isaiah chapter 34, verses 1-5, destruction of Edom is discussed with those same judgment language that he's going to utterly destroy these people. They're going to be cast out. Their stink will be come out of their carcass. The mountains will be melted with blood. All the hosts of heaven, that sun, moon, and stars, are going to be dissolved. That didn't happen when Edom fell. He tells us that's the destruction of Edom, a wicked nation, but it's done in picturesque, apocalyptic style and language. It's symbolic of a total destruction. He says that the heavens shall be rolled together as a scroll, or as a roll, like a lampshade, or like a window shade being rolled up and flap, flap, flap. It's all taken away. Well, that didn't really happen when Edom fell. It's a picture, and we need to understand the pictures and the symbology there, and some of that was pointed out. And I like to point out this, just a little detail. The sevens in Revelation just jump out all the time at us. In chapter 6, verse 15, the kings of the earth, number one, the great men, and number two, the rich, number three, the chief captains, number four, the mighty men, number five, the bondmen, number six, and every free man. And as Lonnie said, all of these come together and are saying, let's get away from the judgment of God. It's falling. And I believe it fell, and I believe that the culprit there is Rome. It's falling on Rome, and I believe it will interpret itself later on. And you can study this with Brad or with Lonnie or with Ivy through our eyes, and then make up your mind. But I believe the book is complete. It's a unique book that needs really to be interpreted within itself, and let the Bible interpret itself. But I think this is a great study. The six seals are open, but the seventh seal is the key, and we won't get to that for a while. Brad may explain some of that, because chapter 7 is a very special chapter on the 144,000. Don't miss that. People are just confused and taught all kinds of weird and wild things about that, and we can get an understanding of that between us, I think, in Revelation chapter 7. Brad?
All right. I guess I will take the last word then. 3 points. I was so glad that Ivy went ahead and mentioned as far as that apocalyptic language. When you look at the Old Testament, you do have that almost upheaval language as far as Acts chapter 2 is another example where Peter goes back and quotes Joel. The overthrow of civil government is how some of the older preachers describe it. And that's really what's being described. God used that a very intense language. The sun literally, I mean, the stars didn't literally fall to the earth. I mean, that picture is just impossible to occur.
Amen.
So yeah. That is helpful, I think, as far as affirming that we are dealing with symbology. You also find, as far as I think, when we look at Revelation chapter 6, the last two or three verses there, this is bad. I mean, whether you emphasize what we've heard from Ivy tonight, you emphasize what Lonnie talks about tonight, when God shows up in judgment, it is bad. When national judgments came in the Old Testament, it was bad. When people die in a wrong relationship with God, it is bad. And if you're on the wrong side of God in this life and eternity, do not expect things to go well. When God talks about the great day of wrath, he's not kidding. He doesn't overestimate that kind of thing. So you always want to make sure that you seek God and do what is right.
Brad, real quickly, can I jump on that just a second?
Yeah.
Lonnie touches you too. It's bad. That's a great point. He says, who shall be able to stand?
Yeah.
Roman Empire strong, man. We're mean. Yeah. We're beating you people up. We're afflicting the Christians. They got no chance. And yet the wrath of the Lamb is here. The Lamb, don't mess with the Lamb. Who's going to be afraid of little lamb chops? The Lamb is going to get you. And he's going to get you. And Rome or whoever it is the enemy, cannot stand whoever they are. You worried about the virus? You worried about China? You worried about Russia? Don't be worried, folks. Don't be worried.
And then that is
the Lamb will come.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that is so true. When we think about an omnipotent and an omniscient God, don't worry about any nation. Well, Jesus, I think Lonnie cited earlier, Matthew 10:28. Don't be afraid of them that kill the body, but not able to kill the soul. We need to remember that individually and nationally. Ivy, you may want to jump in here for just a second, but for the people who believe in some form of premillennialism, I do not see how when they come to Revelation chapter 6, the final few verses, that they get any kind of thousand-year reign out of that. So however you slice the chapter, I mean, this just seems to be a death blow to all forms of premillennialism.
I have one quick thing on that the thousand-year reign of Christ on the earth is never taught. That was never said. It's one of those misnomers like the rapture or like the second coming. Those are traditional statements that just aren't true, that they aren't right. So we need to cycle back into a biblical, understanding of this and appreciation of what it says. And that's why this study is so vital, and it's due to a lot of us, Brad. Go ahead.
Well, the viewers don't see it, but Ivy and Lonnie put in a lot of time on these studies, and that consists of some prep time as well. So we continue to appreciate the work that they're doing. We continue to appreciate your watching and pray that God will be with you and bless you, especially as you study the book of Revelation. Join us for our next study.